And again, that's something that you and your teacher, a player and their teacher, needs to figure out. Like, what do I do? What do you do when you hit your good shot? I should be trying to do that every shot, regardless of the last one.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on the Tour Coach Podcast. Thanks for listening in. You're about to get some golf information to help your game from the best teachers, mental coaches, players, fitness experts from around the world. These are all the people that I deal with day in, day out, traveling the PGA, LPGA, Corn Ferry Tours, or down there at Old Palm where I do most of my teaching in Palm Beach Gardens. So sit back, relax, let's get better at the game of golf. And hey, if you like what you hear, please, please, please take a second, like, subscribe, and share it wherever you get your podcast.
All right, so joining me here on the Tour Coach Podcast, one of our world-famous roundtables, my good friend Coop, Donald Cooper, with his Presidente beer sitting right here in the golf dorm, and our good friend and student and touring professional, Will McFadden, getting ready for first stage. Gents, thanks for, one, for hanging out, and we've had a lot of fun. But two, thanks for your help this weekend. We had six really good young players, all aspiring to be one. I think they're all going to be college players. And we've, you know, a couple of them for sure, they're all aspiring for further. And I think that, you know, I was telling you guys before we came on the air that, yeah, I did Smiley's podcast and the
last great podcast.
Thank you. Smiley, by the way, if you check out Smiley's show, it's an awesome show. Really, he does a really good job. And but we had a lot of response. It was about talking about it. And we've had emails and messages come into this show as well about what, you know, really people want to know what they could do to go from like that guy that shoots mid-low 80s to becoming a single-digit player or a single-digit golfer that's wanting to become a scratch player and a competitive player. And the low digit handicap that's really wanting to take that next step to be a competitive, like mid am or amateur
really
type player.
Looking right? For a way to take like four or five shots.
Yeah. And I thought so we could come up with, I thought we'd go around the horn and we'd do six things on this evening that we've noticed from the work we did this weekend with these young players. Because I think the things that we see with them are very similar to the stuff that I see coaching.
For sure.
You know, all of those different levels, and maybe it's to different degrees. But I thought, Coop, let's kick it to you first. Tell me one thing that you saw this weekend or from your experience that people out there could apply that would help them take that next level step in becoming a more competitive player, a single-digit handicap.
The first thing that jumps out is course management.
Okay.
Where to miss the golf ball. The distance control, you know, mm-hmm. is a little off. That would help them immensely in the way they practice, not practice, but warm up. You know, it's getting better now that you guys are working with them, but I still think that they need to be more disciplined with the warm up before to go into the, you know, to the first tee.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the biggest one's course management and, you know, maybe just sharpen some wedges.
Let's start with course management. You had an interesting observation today. We did a game that we haven't done a ton, but with the size group we had, I thought it was perfect. I also think it would be really good for people out there that are trying to become competitive golfers to play is we had a person do a two ball scramble with themselves that they played the worst ball. You had some pretty interesting observations.
Yeah, so we played the first three holes worst ball scramble, made the turn, played the second three holes as a best ball scramble.
Mm-hmm.
So you switch from playing, I mean, I don't want to call it defensive golf, but definitely paying super attention to where you're placing your ball mm-hmm. to go into the best ball scramble where we're just firing at
mm-hmm.
it. And it was amazing today. Obviously, the three kids are the three of them are all going to be great players. A couple of them playing college golf mm-hmm. soon. And in the worst ball scramble, I thought that the misses were phenomenal. Like, mm-hmm. I think combined score was 1 over par, I think.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they've almost taken their two balls and put together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was really good.
Between three of them combined, 1 over par and a worst ball scramble, which is impressive.
Very impressive.
And we immediately make the turn into the best ball scramble, you know, where you're supposed to birdie.
Have some fun and make some birdies.
The shots all of a sudden became totally erratic, like out of play, some of the water. I mean, I think, if I remember right, I think we had a birdie and two pars on the for them on the first hole, par five. But still, like, they went from thinking about where they were about to place their golf ball in the worst ball scramble to not worrying about where they were about to hit the ball. They were just trying to hit it straight at the flag.
I mean, it jumped out at us.
Yeah, it was wild. I've never seen anything like this. They went from their brains working in the right areas to where am I about to place my golf ball to I'm just going to unload on this thing.
We both realized that it was all mental. Nothing was technical. Their swing, it changed. It was all how they were thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
I see it a lot as a coach, and I see it, you know, I think in this day where, you know, all the stats tell you to push everything and distance and so forth. And I think that, while I think that that's certainly true, I think that some of the art of what you certainly see on tour and I do, which is the idea of thinking about when they do practice rounds and they do things where they want to leave the golf ball.
Right.
And I think that's something that, I mean, you cannot, there's always people going to say, oh, a 10 handicap, 8 handicap may not be able to control it enough. But I think if you're in that realm, you have enough control of your golf ball. You hit enough good quality shots.
I mean, a true 10 handicap
right.
is not a terrible golf.
No, way good.
They have a clue.
Right. And so I think that what you guys saw is a great lesson for people and a way to practice to get yourself better.
Way to play the game, too.
Yeah. And so if you went out there and you did a worst ball scramble with yourself, and you had to really start thinking about where to leave the ball. And not, like you said, not playing defensive.
Yeah.
You're making aggressive swings. I didn't see the holes. Yeah, I was there for most of those three holes. I really didn't see anything. I didn't see any inappropriate shots. Nobody put it out of position.
Yeah, I think of that third hole, that par three. I mean, you've got a lake right and a huge slope in the middle of the green.
Where you can't see any green road.
Right. And so, like, you have to really hit a nice shot there and not hit it in the water
for sure,
or miss the green left and have a super difficult up and down. And I think in the worst ball scramble, every single player was playing from 20 feet left of the hole, right where it was supposed to be. And that was their worst
Some
ball.
Pros would hit it.
That's exactly
it. It was impressive.
So I'm going to shift to another. I'm going to say a thing that, touching on what you talked about, wedges. Mm-hmm. We went out on the golf course, the big course, with a young guy who is playing in the ACC. And I asked you, he was talking to you about in between wedge distances. Mm-hmm. And he said, I forget the yardage on this was, you know, it was 117, 118.
Which hole? Number one?
Yeah. 117, 118.
18, yeah.
And, you know, the green was narrow behind it, not a lot of room. You had some wind. And his question was, like, should he hit the hard shot or should he flight something and take something off of it? Talk through what your advice is. Because, I don't think a lot of the golfers we're talking about trying to take that step.
Right.
Understand wedge play, how to control the golf ball, how to control their numbers, how to control spin. And that's, to me, most of the time, not a golf swing golf lesson, that's an understanding the process, the approach, and right. how to hit it.
My knowledge just comes from, you know, caddying and being there after shot after shot after shot, knowing if it's a downwind pretty good, a pro's going to want to create as much spin as possible, especially on a peninsula, you know, part of the green tub. And that's how I go about it. Like, I don't want to see the soft shot downwind with that little bit of a green. If we can hit the green short of the pin and roll off. So that's why I went with that. You know, I like the hard and downwind, into the wind or across. I really like seeing a ball, you know, in a cut sense, left-hander or right-hander. with something, I'll know it will stop. And I don't know if I answered this question correctly or whatever,
I think another thing that I don't see, I want both y'all opinion, is like the understanding of like, okay, so if a pin's back and it's a long green, you got a lot of room, like hitting the full shot, that if you don't hit it perfect, has a lot of spin and it never gets there, is to me, like I see lots of players do that. They just say, oh, it's 120, that's my full, or 100 yards, that's my full sand wedge. Pins all the way back, you got a bunch of room. Mm-hmm. But if I don't hit it perfect or it gets too much spin, it never gets there, versus hitting the controlled partial wedge shot, right?
Not educated.
Right. And I think that there's some, like, the yardage isn't always the yardage. It's the scenario. It's the situation. It's what you got going on. And I don't think that, going to your point about understanding your numbers, like you had folks do this today out there and this weekend with our launch pro, and I've seen you do it, like hitting different numbers with the same number with different clubs because it's different shots, right? We do that all the time with the launch pro there at home and that travels with me. But what do you see with that?
I think a lot of the guys, especially the really good juniors, I see a lot of them that work all their wedge numbers off of a full swing. Mm-hmm. So, like, their stock wedge numbers, their full swing. Well, I don't think you see any pros ever hit a wedge full. Like,
exactly right.
And so I see a lot of them working from a full swing down, which causes their chest to stop turning, sort of a decel at the bottom. And you start getting those balls that run up the face and go real high, and you've got no judge distance when that happens. So I like to see the guys out there that are kind of have more of a compact wedge move, where they're using a lot of their chest to drive that ball low for that consistent flight and getting the spin consistent every time. Yeah, I think it gives them a much better chance of
almost a great shot. Make them watch a stripper video of him hitting some wedges,
for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like you don't rip it all.
And I also think that there's different ways to play wedges, right? Like I always, you know, I use him as an analogy a bunch because when I'd go up to Alabama, he played there. I mean, he was practicing, and from my years out on tour or going to the Bears Club, I've seen him hit a bunch of wedges, and he posts them on his Instagram all the time. Justin Thomas,
good,
but he's an unbelievable wedge player. Yeah. He to me really controls the speed of his motion, mm-hmm, to control the spin.
And
right?
It shows the one he makes a lot of.
Right. And so I like to have players learn to control the speed that the ball's coming off. Like, you know, okay, so this ball came off at 75 miles an hour. Like, let's take 5 miles an hour off
of
see
that,
what
sure.
It does, right? And I think that, like, there's a lot of different ways, but I think learning to hit different numbers with different clubs, different spins, and different trajectories is a real key.
When you can do 150 with three different clubs, you're getting good.
Right, and I just think that, like, that's not a golf swing issue. That's we've got the technology. We've got the launch pros. We've got the quads. We got the ability to go out there. A lot of clubs have them. You can use them or you could do that in a sim in the winter, mm-hmm, right?
For sure.
And go do it. They're like, figure out for you the way to hit different numbers with different clubs so that you have different shots for any scenario. I think most of the golfers we're talking about versus the players they want to become, tour players, really good amateurs, have multiple shots they can hit to fit different scenarios, whereas your 10, 8, 12, and even some junior golfers, good junior players, have one number they can hit a wedge, and if the damn thing isn't that number, they don't really know how to get it close, right? Or they've never practiced it.
It's like if you took their bag, you know, a touring pro or a really good amateur, whatever, just a good player, he's taken his 14 clubs, and he's probably got 50 clubs in a sense because of the different, you know, the way they hit it, cutting, drawing, low, high, whatever, window, coming out different windows. And they got 50 bullets in there. Mm-hmm. You want to fight them?
No.
You know, because usually an amateur is going to have one club they will never hit. Mm-hmm. So they have 13 of them. And that's what I try to teach them. the guys that come to us is give them something that, you know, they're going to use down the road, and that's all, you know, they have the ability, but they don't think, like, they never think about the next shot. We saw that, didn't we, Will, today, or, you know, oh, I drove it right up there near the green. Yeah, you drove it too far. You hit the wrong club.
Can't spin it.
They can't, and they're like baffled, like, well, I still don't understand that.
One other thing that I saw today, and I think, and this came from a question we voiced it to you, it was again out on the golf course this afternoon, was, you know, well, when I hit a bad shot, what should I do then? And I said, and I know this from my years, some of them with, you know, when you and I worked together and so many of the others, I think the best players understand what they do to hit good shots. And they keep trying to do that every shot, regardless of what the last one they hit. Whereas I think guys that are girls in this range we're talking about trying to take a step are always reacting to the last shot. I hit that last one left, so I don't want them. This one can't go left. I got to make it go right. Right. And you saw that on the tee this afternoon.
Sure.
And so I think that I think that's, and again, that's something that you and your teacher, a player and their teacher needs to figure out. Like, what do I do? What do you do when you hit your good shot? I should be trying to do that every shot, regardless of the last one. What have you seen with that? And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think as far as like after a bad shot on the golf course, I try to ingrain what I was trying to do there. Like, obviously nobody's gonna hit them all perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, just for example, like if I'm trying to get more onto my left side and turn on top of the ball more instead of falling back a hair, after I hit a bad shot, I'll do one good rehearsal of what I was trying to do.
So I'm making sure you were
so that when I move to the next one, I know what the plan is there. That the last one, sure, I fell back on that last one, but on the next one, I'm going to get
hurt. Then after you do that, it's out of your head.
Right.
Because if it's stuck, I think the chance of it happening again on the next shot would be there, you know, a lot more bold.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let it go at some point.
What else is good? What else do you see out there? Yeah, I think we've done great with management, distance control, wedge distances, where to leave shots. You know, wedge play and how to, you know, certainly like how to react to bad shots is a key. What else have you seen?
I love when we go out there at the end of the weekend or the end of the day and, you know, everybody's been working on all their moves all day, their chipping and their irons mm-hmm. and drivers and everything. But then at the end of the day, we go out there and play and compete, right? And so
Kevin Fritz was pissed. He didn't beat
you. Yeah, you gotta learn. He's learning how to compete.
Yeah, but I love going out there and watching everybody compete, and you can tell, you can see it in some of them when how they can switch from that technical mode into competitive mode, and I think that's a big thing that I'm just learning. Like, you can't go to a tournament in full technical mode and expect to perform.
That tracks on your back.
At a certain point, you've got to switch it into competition mode and be ready to go, and you can tell some of the guys that can do it really well, and it's impressive.
I also don't think you can go from practice mode into competitive mode without practicing being in competitive mode, right?
We talked
about that a lot. Have that reps, right?
We did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are some ways you've learned to practice being in competitive mode?
I think it switches from like hitting shots over again, working on technique, to a lot of one ball stuff where we're focused on one ball, like on the course, like on the putting green, finding some sort of drill where you're going through your full routine and you got to get the ball in the hole instead of just doing chalk line work and stuff. As far as chipping, doing some up and down stuff or competing with somebody, just sitting there hitting chips over and over and over again isn't going to get you ready for Sunday or golf
tournament. Today's format, I haven't seen a bunch, I'll be honest. I haven't seen the worst ball of mine, because we never finished, me and my guys. But, you know, I just never saw it much, and I was like, wow.
It's a good game.
How good is this? And Someone mentioned it, Evan Wilson, you know, Tiger said that, you know, one time they asked him, you know, from a comeback from some injury or what have you, or time off, When did you know you were ready to say, you know, I played worst ball at Nona by myself, you know, blowing 30, raining, and shot 7 under and was ready.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
That's something that, you know.
Yeah, go do a worst ball scramble at home and try to shoot 7.
On a sunny day.
Got to make every putt twice.
But I just, yeah. I think that was.
I think it's an unbelievable game. I thought it was unreal. Yourself. I would encourage anybody watching us trying to become a competitive
player. Especially a person with multiple personalities. It'd be a great game for them. Like, hey, good shot.
It's a good play. 2, 3, 4, 5 holes doing that.
It is.
Just do it a hole or two.
Yeah, don't still do 18. It takes a long time.
But like, it's a fantastic way to challenge yourself. And also to improve how you think.
The only way to get them to think about where they hit the golf ball. Yeah. It really is.
It's a way to do it without actually doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to think about it. Like, especially if your first shot is a great shot.
Right.
Then it teaches you to rebound. Rebound and move on to the next shot. Because even though you just hold that 30-footer, you still got to hit the next shot.
He made a 30-footer, and then he, you know, ran the next one. It was a tough putt. He ran by three. And so I think it's real. One of its real values also is with the putting, because it really does simulate. Yeah. And you make a 6-footer, you're competing, you got to make it 2 times in a row.
It brings in competitive feelings.
Yeah. It has some anxiety. So I appreciate it. It's good. Anything else you guys saw? We've tackled some good stuff today with this. I was really, really excited about what we did to these young folks today. And I think that, you know, a lot of folks watch this stuff and they come down and they spend a few days with us. And
we spend a little time on the tightest driving hole on this planet Earth.
That is.
Hole 2 at Old Palm.
I saw
practice holes, yeah.
6, 7 shots in a row that were just mine.
They drove it so much better on that than they do
us. Just Matt's ass. Yep. I mean,
it was very eye-opening, watching them go from the worst ball to the best ball, how it, all the shots, I mean, all the thoughts going into each shot,
everything
seemingly just went away.
The grip went from that ball. White knuckles.
And it was like, there's no way you're going to get that. Interesting to see, like, because I was out there playing with them.
Yeah.
First practice hole, after we switched to the best ball, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I stepped up and tried to.
But he really, you realized it caught hold of it.
Yeah. 550 yard par 5. I said, I guess I got to kill both these. Didn't. Got about 3 more yards than the first one.
Yep.
So it was really interesting to see, and getting to hang out with all those juniors and good players. I mean, they're all going to.
Yeah, they're
going to.
We had a good day. We had some great young folks in through all weekend. Guys, this was awesome. Thanks again for a great weekend. I know we got some good stuff coming up this week, and good luck to you in Q School. We did some good work today as well. I know Coop plans to be on the bag, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys soon. We're going to do some good stuff.
Shout out to Old Palm.